and welcome to a special edition of the Players Podcast brought to you by Canterbury Park in honor of a really cool night of racing that we're going to be talking about, the 27th Minnesota Festival of Champions. It's all happening tonight. This is Wednesday. I have to look down to see what day of the month it is. It is Wednesday, September 9th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Degenerate Flophouse and joined by two esteemed guests who are associated with Canterbury Park. The first one is returning to our airwaves. He's been on a couple of times this summer and given out a bunch of winners, analyst Brian Aragone. Brian, how are you today?
Hey, thanks for having me on. Certainly appreciate it.
And then we're also joined by a man, I don't know if we ever did podcast stuff together back in the Place with the Letters days, but I do recall interviewing you. And in fact, at one point, I wrote a letter, not a letter, I wrote a column for the Racing Form that somebody saw about the Dog Days of Summer Handicapping Challenge, saw the article, drove to Minnesota, and promptly won the contest. So I feel like we're connected in that regard. Also from Canterbury Park, Jeff Madej. Jeff, how are you?
Doing really well, and thanks. And I do recall that. You're right.
I can't remember the player.
Contest beat like no one else.
Can you remember who the player was? I'll be super impressed if you can come up with that name.
I can't. You know what? I cannot recall. And we've been doing this. This is the 24th year of the Dog Days, and that must have been a decade ago that you wrote about it.
But, not that far. Wasn't quite that. I wasn't working for them yet. Okay. That's how I know. But 6 or 7 years, close enough. Let's start there, actually, with the Dog Days of Summer contest, which is coming up. In person only. When is it? How do the rules work? What do people need to know if they want to get involved?
It is this weekend, the 12th and 13th of September. It's a live bankroll contest. So there's a $100 entry fee. $400 live bankroll. We'll be playing for minimum of 2 NHC seats and 3 if we reach 75 entries. And it's like a regular day at the track where you take that $400 and you can wager it and re-wager it in any way that you'd like to, betting any track that we take, which is basically everything. So it's been a popular format for people, I think. And I still maintain it is the first live bankroll contest. They said this is their 24th year. And
yeah.
I'm pretty sure it is.
You can lay claim to that. I'm almost sure. At least continuously running. Places might have experimented with different formats. In terms of how to get involved, there's unfortunately not an online component, right? It's in person only, but you guys have had fans, limited fans, this meet. Tell us a little bit about more folks, what they can expect if they want to come play in this thing.
Well, they probably have to jump in their car like this previous winner did and just drive right up here to Shakopee, Minnesota. But it is on track only because we use other tracks content, actually Canterbury's not racing this weekend, but because we do use other tracks content, we don't do an online version.
Makes sense.
So you just have to kind of show up here and enter, and there's, we don't cap the number of entries. So it's fun. It's worth the drive. We're only 6 hours from Chicago. It's and always attracts good players too. When you look at the list of winners, guys like, Brian Harrity, who's well known on the tournament circuit.
Oh yeah, Brian's a great player.
Mike Ferrazzo, a local guy who won the NHL
Tour champion. Yeah, absolutely, and a great dude as well. Yeah. Hopefully, he'll be in the mix.
Mark Strife has won it.
Another tour champ.
A lot of good players.
Yeah.
So it attracts people. It's an interesting format. It's like, there's more and more of these live bankroll tournaments, as you know, but this one seems to have worked. It works for us. And even with everything going on, and I have no idea who's going to travel here. And talking with other racetrack and tournament hosts, they don't either, but I certainly wasn't going to not hold it and stop that streak. So we're going to go. Doesn't matter who shows up or how many, we're going to give away some NHC seats.
Can folks sign up at the last minute, or do they need to reach out to you beforehand? Is there any deadline for entries?
No deadline. Just show up on Saturday and we'll start taking entries at 10:30. I think we take them till about 3:30 that afternoon, and all you have to do is make it here.
Jeff, one more question for you before we dive into the handicapping and bring Brian back in. This event, not only does the Dog Days tournament have an interesting history, but the Festival of Champions does as well. Very quickly, if you could just let people know a little bit about the backstory of this night of racing that's become one of the centerpieces of the Canterbury Park meet.
Oh, the Festival of Champions actually dates back to 1992 when what was then Canterbury Downs was owned by Ladbroke Racing. And as you know, Ladbroke is, you know, in Europe and in England specifically, where they're interested in off-track wagering. Well, they were able to pass legislation that allowed off-track wagering. They were sued by the Attorney General. It was found unconstitutional, and they literally lost interest in running Canterbury at that point. And just let the purses decline, attendance decline. So the horsemen got together, the owners, breeders, and trainers of Minnesota Breds, and said, look, here's what we're going to do. We want to run a day of racing. That's for Minnesota Breds only. The last day of the meet, after the official meet had ended in September of 1992, they were able to get it televised locally, attracted 11,000 fans, had a really great day. But Ladbroke subsequently closed the racetrack down at the end of the year. But they, that really, the Festival of Champions really got Randy Sampson, who's our CEO now and actually bought the track with his father and Dale Shinney in 94. That was kind of that spark that kept that hope alive. And yes. I really do think festival's why we're here today.
That's very cool. Proof of concept, really, that this Minnesota bred-centric track could work. Is that part of the idea?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And there was racing in Minnesota and breeding racehorses in Minnesota long before there was ever pari-mutuel racing. And people would breed horses and ship all around the Midwest to run them. And to finally have a track here really meant something to those people and to the fans. And Canterbury was extremely popular until that last season when other gaming came into Minnesota in 91 and 92. But when we came back, we had a tremendous 1995 season, and we continue to. You know, this year, the exception when we're limited to 750 people, but we still attract on a regular basis, you know, an average of 6,500 fans in the past. So when we rebound out of this COVID-19 pandemic, I think racing will be just as strong as it was before.
Well, horse players appreciate you. And I should say that up front. I said this show, you know, I said show presented by Canterbury Park, and you guys have been a valued partner this season. But this show specifically is not really even part of our initial deal. It's me as the voice of horse players saying thank you to Canterbury Park for this meet and for being sensitive in areas regarding takeout and offering some of the best stuff out there at an interesting time. Tonight being no exception, the racing starts at 7:10 Eastern. We kick things off. Race number 5, it's the Bellanote Minnesota Distaff Sprint Stakes. We're going 6 furlongs on the dirt here. Brian, we'll bring you back in to start off here. Is this as simple as ready to run away and move on?
I think it is. And this is a race that, you know, Jeff and I fought to get out of the pick 5, actually, because Ready to Runaway could triple the potential payouts for that 10% takeout pick 5. So appreciative that it kicks off the jackpot pick 6 and it's not in the pick 5 sequence, because Ready to Runaway is 3-5 on the morning line, and she's deserving of that. Since being a $25,000 claim, she's gone on to win 5 stakes in a row, has dominated many of these. The only question mark is sprinting. Most recently, she's been going much longer, which we know she can dominate. But there's some other speed in here. You know, we'll see if Ari Gia, the 2019 champion, can get back on her A game. But Diva Tequila is really rounding into form. Now, I'm not sure Diva Tequila is near the class of Ready to Runaway or some of the others in here, but certainly in good form right now. And Ryan Eckleberry gets the call. That could be the upset, but Ready to Runaway looks like a single on the bingo card.
Jeff, do you see it much the same?
Yeah, I if it's not Ready to run away, I don't know who it would be. I mean, she's sharp, Hall of Fame trainer Mac Robertson. This horse has been a great story, and I think we'll just dominate this field.
Let's just move straight on to that 10% takeout pick 5. We've got all stakes tonight. This is race 6. It starts at 7:40 p.m., and we begin with the Blair's Cove Minnesota Turf Stakes, going a mile and a 16th on the grass. Jeff, we'll keep it with you for your thoughts on this one. How are we going to get these pick 5s kicked off?
Well, we should let the players know that we took a lot of rain yesterday. So the turf course will be probably either good or yielding tonight for the 2 turf stakes races, which if you factor that into your handicapping, do so. And we're not going to see a lot of evaporation. It's an overcast day today, too. So the turf will be good. So you might want to look for horses that favor that. This is a tough race. Hotshot Kid is a horse of the meet. Was horse of the meet last year. He's won multiple races. He's only won once on the turf. Interesting spot, though, for Hotshot Kid to be placed. Most of us thought he would go in the sprint, but Mac Robertson decided this horse long on the grass would be the right spot to go. 9-5 in the morning line. I think this one's vulnerable. I really do. Don Plata is very good. And there's a horse that I think Brian and I talked about last night, and I'll let him mention that, explain why, but AT is loose. One of the all-time leading money earners in Minnesota in Canterbury history. Now, it's a 9-year-old who's maybe lost a step or two, but we know this horse can win at the distance. It's 7-11. So, Brian, why don't you explain AT is loose?
Absolutely. And he doesn't necessarily have the turn of foot that he used to in his younger days. You know, he's 9 years old now. He's only won one race in the last 2 years. However, he continues to come. He's got an engine that doesn't really stop. And that tank is typically full when many of the others are emptying out. And a mile and a 16th is a distance that we haven't run very much here at Canterbury Park on the turf course this year. So that extra 16th of a mile could potentially hinder horses like Drop of Golden Sun, maybe even Hotshot Kid, who did have trouble in the Ralph Strangis, but there's no secret that Hotshot Kid's best races have come on the main track. So it is unique that he shows up in here where he's 1-4 on the turf and has to take on some fellow monsters on our turf course. And you always got to pay attention to whether it's Canterbury Park or anywhere around the country. When a trainer enters in two, you always have to focus on the longer of the two and the odds. And that's exactly what we'll have with AP is loose.
It's an interesting case for this tough old customer, earned over $500,000 Minnesota bred, 9-year-old son of Monarcos. I'm very, very intrigued by that. Any further thoughts, Brian, on this one?
I think this is a race to spread out for those pick five players. This is a race I'm not overly confident in. AP is loose. I think he deserves a long look at potentially double-digit odds. But I'm going to try and spread out, maybe go five or six deep on my tickets and try and beat Hotshot Kid. I do not trust the kid on the turf course. And I think especially with a good or yielding turf course, some weird things can happen in these races, and we could potentially be looking at another big payout.
Let's move on to race number 7, which goes at 8:10. It's the Princess Elaine Minnesota Distaff Turf Stakes, also at a mile and a 16th. Brian, looks open a bit, at least, just judging from the morning line. A lot of runners under 10-1 in here, with the 5-2 favorite being Clickbait. What do you think is going to happen in race number 7?
Well, again, with Mac Robertson, he may have the best horse, but potentially not on this surface. Clickbait, you know, could be the controlling horse if this race were on the dirt, but being that it is on the turf, I think Clickbait could potentially be vulnerable in here. And almost like First Mate at 9-2 has plenty of back class. Early on in her career, she actually took on Monomoy Girl down at Churchill, 5-16, and has really found a home on the turf course. I know most of the earnings have come on the dirt, but frankly, the horse isn't all that quick on the dirt, and on the turf really has a turn of foot that not many can go with. And I think Arietta should have this one prime for a good race and be rolling late. First Mate at 9-2, going to be a horse I use, but I may only use a couple in this. If we're playing the pick fives or starting that late pick four, all stakes pick four, I'm only going to use 3, 4, and 8 in here. Clickbait, and then also the one of the horses towards the outside in Honey Socks Appeal, Martin Escobar, Burn on a Roan. I believe this horse is going for maybe the 5th stakes win on Festival Day. It's unbelievable in a row. Jeff could probably tell you more about Honey Socks Appeal, because this horse has been incredible for a long time.
Yeah, another one with a lot of earnings, over 400,000, 11 wins, this 7-year-old mare. Some very familiar names in the breeding there by successful appeal out of an Indian Charlie mare. Jeff, what are your thoughts on Honey's Socks Appeal and the rest in race number 7?
Well, it's interesting. Honey Socks Appeal had been trained by Mac Robertson up until this year when the owner switched Barnes to Brunel Roan, and she fired a bullet going on 7.5 furlongs on the turf. And she's another one, kind of like AP is loose, that may be a step slower than she used to be, but it is all class and can jump up and run a race like that. And when I mentioned Mac Robertson as well, who has Clickbait in here and Carriage, he's the all-time leading winner on Festival Day. I think he's got twice as many wins, 35 festival wins in his career. So this could be a day where tomorrow we might look back scratching our head when Mac wins four festival races again. And so just saying, don't be surprised. He looks vulnerable. This doesn't look like his strongest hand. There's years when he absolutely can't help but win 4 or 5 of the races. But I think Clickbait is vulnerable in here. Carriage is probably a cut below. So Brian's probably got the right horses here. In First Mate, Brian is correct. We always try to beat First Mate on the dirt, and sometimes she'll jump up and beat us. But Valerie Lund has done a really good job with this Butzo horse, and I think First Mate is the horse to beat in here and should be able to handle a mile and 16th distance as well.
Let's move along to race number 8. We've got 2-year-olds now. 8:40 post time for this one. 6 furlongs on the dirt for these colts. And Jeff, we'll keep it right with you and see what you think in here. Another race, according to the morning line anyway, where there's a few interesting ways to go with Westa Waverly, the 3 being your 5-2 favorite.
Well, Westa Waverly is proven. It got beat by Fire Extinguisher when they first met. Both of them were debuting. Westa Waverly was kind of a buzz horse. We'd heard that the horse could really run. And ran a nice race, lost by a neck, and they were well clear of everybody else. I think those two probably are going to battle it out. Francisco Bravo trains Fire Extinguisher. Bravo, very good with 2-year-olds. Another one who's very good on festival day. I would guess that the 5 Sneaky Diversion will take some play here. And that one interests me. Joel Berndt, who's our leading trainer, and Bob Lothenbach is the owner, who won a grade 1 race, I believe, on Derby Day at Churchill. He's our leading owner here, Bob Lothenbach. And they brought Sneaky Diversion in on September 1st, so 8 days ago. Debuts, wins easily, and now is right back in the festival. And I think this horse will take some money. I can't imagine that was their plan. The horse had been training at Arlington, ships to Canterbury 8 days ago, wins easy. It's an April foal coming back on 8 days rest. I can't believe that was the plan, to race 8 days ago to come to the festival. So I think the horse ran so well, they had to put it in here. But to me, that one would be vulnerable. I'm leaving that off on my ticket. Probably going to focus on the 1, the 2, and the 3 in this race.
I would agree. The Sneaky Diversion, it just probably feels like a free roll to nothing after a performance like that. You got to take a shot. There's no reason not to, but a horse that's going to take a lot of money, and that is a tall ask against some rivals who have some form and figures to suggest that Sneaky Diversion has some work to do here. Brian, how do you see this one?
Well, I'm very intrigued by this race. These two baby races are ones that I always see as, especially for Minnesota Festival of Champions Day, because this is the first time many of them are going 6 furlongs, and also plenty of them are lightly raced, still developing. So what's common is people fall in love with the favorites. They see the big buyer of Fire Extinguisher of 72 or Westa Waverly at 68, and they key in on those horses. And then those horses, the 2-year-olds go, 21 and 4, 45, and the next thing you know, the race is completely falling apart. And this is where we could potentially get prices. I'm not technically sure where it comes from, but I will say that if you're playing those exotics, which I always recommend everyone does, especially with the 10% takeout, this is a race that you can try and catch a price. Fire Extinguisher certainly looks like the one to beat for Francisco Bravo, but you've also got Luis Valenzuela, who's still figuring things out, and I'm not sure he has a stakes win as well. And Sneak Diversion, off of that short rest, I did talk to our leading trainer, Joel Berndt, yesterday, asked him about the jockey change. He was understanding. Rye Eckleberry is loyal to Francisco Bravo, who's a Hall of Fame trainer here at Canterbury Park, and he says, I'm A-okay with getting Dean Butler aboard. He's a money rider. He's in the Hall of Fame here at Canterbury Park. So Joel Berndt says everything's a go for Sneaky Diversion. I've got no strong opinion in here. I did like what I saw from Sneaky Diversion. I also agree that couldn't have been the plan, but could potentially be the fresh horse in this spot in the race that I'm going to try and catch a price, because I do think the favorites will likely be overbet. I think Fire Extinguisher and Westa Waverly are going to be heavily bet, and they're going to be played against for me in the pick 4s and pick 5s.
No, we appreciate that on this show. It's not all about holding feet to the fire for a top pick. Sometimes it's about giving more of an approach to a race, and Brian, you've certainly done that. Jeff, did you have another note on this one?
Yeah, one other thing to look at, and because Brian likes to watch where the jockeys go, and if you look at Westa Waverly, it's been ridden by Alonzo Quinones twice, and now Quinones jumps off and goes to the 7 Alligator Hunter. Now, Quinones is his brother Louie was a champion, a Hall of Fame rider here back in the 90s. He's still riding, obviously, down at Oak Lawn and at Louisiana Downs and whatnot. But, the Quinones name is well known at Canterbury, but so his agent is Richard Grunder, who is the voice of Tampa Bay Downs. And I asked Richard, weeks ago, what are you going to do? And he said he had, and Richard has been successful as an agent. And this is the kind of inside stuff I like to look at in racing, but he's been here also since 1985. He's a loyal guy, and it might cost him money. It might not, but he said, I'm rolling the dice with the Alligator Hunter, and that's where we're going to ride. And so I appreciate that out of the agency. And that's a big move to jump off of a favorite in $100,000 race to ride for a guy that really has helped you out this year. When Quinones came in, name known, But Alonzo was not known by any of the trainers and connections here, and he's had an excellent meet. So that's another one to look at. If the Alligator Hunter wins, don't be surprised.
I love that tidbit. Let's talk about race number 9, the flip side of the coin. We stay with two-year-olds and move to the fillies, going 6 furlongs on the dirt. Brian, we'll kick the ball back to you to get your thoughts here.
Yeah, I'm not thrilled with my top selection in this race, which is something that you never like to hear, but I find it difficult to get around the post draw, but I love the horse. Hell of the North for Rake Farms. It's the homebred. They've had champions in the past, and this is by actually a champ. She's out of a champion mare in Sky and Sea, who made well over, you know, $400,000 at Canterbury Park and was a beast on the track for many years. So Hell of the North, the breeding certainly there, and the talent showed on August 17th, winning by 7 lengths. But what's most impressive to me is the way the horse did it professionally. It looked like the horse kind of went gate to wire rather easily, but Runaway A-Train was a well-meant second-time starter for Matt Robertson, our leading trainer for 13 years, and really ran right up to the throat of Hell of the North. And when Butler shook the reins and chirped at her, she responded beautifully. So I understand that the time isn't that great, the buyers don't jump off the page, and you're drawing post number 1, but I do think this horse can race just behind the speed, and Dean Butler, the Hall of Fame rider, can find a way through when that 6 furlongs Hell of the North could really be a runner and potentially an overlay at 4-1, because I do think Molly's Angel in this spot is going to be overbet. On paper, looks like your most likely winner, but this is a 2-year-old who hasn't been seen since July 20th. I know the workouts are consistent, but I'm going to take the wait-and-see approach on a potentially even-money 2-year-old only making career start number 2 who hasn't been seen in some time.
Let me ask you, Brian, is your objection to the rail draw for Hell of the North just related to the sort of conventional wisdom about 2-year-olds breaking from the rail not being a great thing, or is it something specific to the way that Canterbury's been playing?
It has nothing to do with Canterbury, and it's actually not even just 2-year-olds. Around the country, I typically don't love the rail unless I have a ton of speed. Mm-hmm. Even if I'm on a deep closer, I don't like being on the rail necessarily. But if this horse breaks sharp, it could almost be worse for me, because then Dean Butler really has to make some decisions and if he's going to push through and try and stay up with the leading group or if he's going to check out of it. And for a 2-year-old filly, that's bad news.
Jeff, how do you see this one?
Well, I thought Hell of the North looked impressive, yes, but the pace was relatively slow. Now, the horse came back and worked 47-3 6 days ago. So I guess the horse is sharp. And Brian's right about the breeding. If Scott Rake doesn't breed a lot of horses, he's more of a quality over quantity guy, which isn't always the case with breeders. Sure. This horse can run for sure. But Bravo, Francisco Bravo, the 2, Star of the North, would probably be my selection in this race if I had to pick one horse. But I think this is another one, like Brian was saying, where the pace can be an unknown and things can happen with these 2-year-olds that can improve immensely overnight. I think you have to look at the trainers that have had success with 2-year-olds on festival day, and Bravo was one of them. So Star of the North, I think, rates a very big chance here, especially with our leading rider, Rye Eccleberry, up.
Makes sense to me. Let's move on to our nightcap. We've got the Crocroc Minnesota Sprint Stakes. This time around, we are going 6 furlongs for 3 and up. And we'll ask the question we always ask on these shows first to you, Jeff. How are we going to get paid in this pick 5?
Well, that's a great question. And I assume that this will be a huge handle night for us. There's not a lot of competition, and I think the pool is going to be big. And I think that, you know, if we can find a price, I think you're going to see a real large payout. And this Crocroc Minnesota Sprint came up completely differently than I thought. We had assumed that Hotshot Kid would be in here. And then there's a horse missing, Mr. Jägermeister, who is faster than fast. He had a little bit of a setback, and trainer Valon kicked him out. He's down in Kentucky now, turned out. He'll be back probably later in the year or next year. So it's a strange sprint where I think really you could look at any one of these horses and make a case. And that's not always the, you know, typical of any track that has a state bred day. There's usually some horses that are just way better than the rest of the state breds. That's not the case in any of the races, I don't think, other than Ready to Runaway. So this sprint kind of emphasizes that, where I think any one of these 6 horses could win. Mr. Banjo Man, I think, is one-dimensional, needs the lead, isn't going to get it. Weekend Ride had a 3-year-old who had a super disappointing Minnesota Derby as a 3-5 favorite, just absolutely stopped trying to go 2 turns, but cuts back now to 6 furlongs, where I think he's going to be much more effective. That horse has a big chance in here. Cinco Star, Mac Robertson, we talked about Mac. He also has Mr. Banjo Man. So, and then you've got the two Astronaut Oscar and Fireman Oscar, who are owned by the same guy, Pete Mattson. One is speed, one's a closer. So you could, and I haven't even mentioned Ray's Angel, who's been super sharp and beat a really good field on the turf last time out, an open company turf race, now faces state bred. So you really could make a case for any one of these six. I think that's what makes this an intriguing race to close out the pick five.
If I forced you to, if I did hold your feet to the fire on this one, what would be your top pick?
I think Ray's Angel is going to run a really, really big race tonight. I think we might get 4-1 on the horse because I believe the Robertson horses get over bet. And I think that one's headed in the right direction. Wasn't their plan. I talked with the owner earlier this week, and running in this race was not the plan when they started the year at Will Rogers Downs, but this horse really has come around. It's super sharp right now and, you know, and beat some of our best. Granted, they were, you know, cheaper claimers, 10,000, 12,000 claimers and starter allowance type horses, but open company horses that had won multiple times this meet and won that on the turf. So I think the horse is sharp. Mike Beeler is a very good trainer, another guy that shows up on festival day when he has stock. So Ray's Angel, my top pick.
I love the idea that you talk about what an open race it is and basically make a case for, you know, all six can win, but the one you don't like being the morning line favorite. That takes a six-horse field. You know, maybe you at first it's not that exciting to think about, oh, we're anchoring this with a six-horse field. But when you don't like the favorite on the morning line and you can make a case for the other five, suddenly I know my interest is piqued all the more in this sequence. Brian, how are we going to close this thing out?
This is a tough race. It's short on numbers but long on talent. I don't think we can ride as much of a chance. A three-year-old taking on some premier older horses in here. Exits a very disappointing Minnesota Derby, now cutting back. They've asked a lot of weekend ride, and that's a horse that I won't use on anything. I agree with Jeff between Cinco Star and Ray's Angel. Certainly looks like the one, and then Mr. Banjo Man, just that class prevails. I do have Banjo Man on top. I don't think he's as vulnerable as maybe Jeff does. You know, he's taking on some complete monsters here at Canterbury and even some open company foes like Shannon C. and Mojo Man, who have had very nice careers. I've got Mr. Banjo Man on top. I'd be remiss. I know Minnesota Festival of Champions ends here, but maybe Jeff's two favorite races of the entire meet come in the last two races of the night. So while the pick five, pick four does end in race 10, we have the Minnesota Quarter Horse Futurity in race 11 and the Minnesota Quarter Horse Derby in race 12. And those are the media mogul Jeff Madej's favorite races of all time.
You got to give us your insights on them now.
Well, I think, you know, here's why I like the cues. One, the pain is, it's, you know, it's short. You 20 seconds and it's over, you're on to the next race, right or wrong. So that's the beauty of the quarter horses. But also, I think there's a lot of great quarter horse players. There's not as much sharp money in there. So I think you can find overlays in the quarter horses. And if you're willing to watch replays, and a lot of people don't watch replays on any kind of racing, but if you don't watch them on the quarter horses, you're up against it. I don't have any super sneaky horses in here. I really do think it's going to be, you know, the best, probably the two morning line favorites will win this. Ed Ross Hardy's got in each of the races. He's got Western Reserve, who's already beaten open company in Iowa and should dominate this field. But let me say this, it's two-year-olds probably racing under the lights in the dark for the first time. Yep. And that might not sound like a daunting task, but it is. I mean, it's a whole different scenario for young horses to run under lights when they've been running, you know, generally in daylight, and that's what's been the case here at Canterbury when quarter horses have started the card typically. So, but Western Reserve in the 11th, and I would say that you're going to have a hard time beating the ADO Fantastic Aria in the 12th race. So nothing super great, but it's not a bad way to get out if the favorite stakes don't go your way.
I love it. Now, will those races be taken by most ADWs around the country? The quarter horse races?
Yeah. Absolutely. All the major ADWs will take them.
Fantastic. Well, guys, I want to thank you so much for taking time out and talking about this exciting sequence. I know I'll be sitting there with my Queen's Plate PPs looking ahead to the weekend and watching some racing tonight. And hopefully your guidance will put more money in our accounts than is in there right now. Brian and Jeff, thank you so much for your time tonight. And thank Canterbury Park one more time, just as an organization. The 10% pick five has been a big hit with horse players, and we thank you for it. and your schedule this year. So many things horse player friendly. Really do appreciate it. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.